No, just with the electronic file, I believe our assessor is actually the one in our office to receive that notification from the state. So I think they actually reach out indicating, you know, that it's time for us to renew.
Yes, I believe you're right as well. All right, perfect.
Can I, quick question? Hi, this is
Yes,
Cheryl
of course.
Fox. Normally the deputy treasurer in Lansing, I'm filling in as an interim treasurer income tax administrator, and it might be a silly question, but when you said we can keep the electronic files, as long as if there's like a signature, we're able to produce that, would it be just needing to keep the paper copy of that signature and the rest would just come back, I mean, print off from an electronic file? Or do you need to actually keep the whole document?
I think you have to keep electronically the file in its final form. For example, like if you have a letter, you can't just keep the letter without the signature. You have to have the signature version scanned and copied in onto your hard drive or thumb drive or your cloud, wherever you keep it.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
But then we would destroy the paper copy.
I think you can't, based on the way the record retention is written, you can destroy it as long as you can reproduce it again.
Perfect.
I don't
think
the wet signature copy, you can reproduce it.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So our next question is regarding the shortage of coins. And we kind of started talking about this last month because it had just kind of been announced. But since there's a shortage of coins, we're not getting as many coins from the banks. So the question was regarding, can we ask customers to bring exact change? So Brett, do you have any insight on that?
Yep, I checked into that as well, and you can request that they pay an exact change, but if they don't want to, you have to accept whatever they pay, as long as it's not pennies. All money in coin except pennies. And that's based on a state statute from like the 1850s that's never been updated. And I'll try to copy that into the...
Has anyone had any issues with coin shortages? Do you want to chat about it at all? Or just curious to know if anybody's dealing with that at all. Okay. Well, hopefully it doesn't affect us too much. So our next question... Oh, here we go. Let's see. Okay, so some have, but they're replenishing it from other areas. Yeah, we've been trying to keep a little bit more coins on hand just in case, but hopefully that it won't be a major issue going forward. All right, next, what other records do treasurers use to keep track of payment batches in the checks used to the entities? Do you keep a spreadsheet daily? So maybe I'll start with Brett, and then maybe if Paul and Randy, if you have anything you want to add to that as well.
Sure. The only thing I do in addition is I have two things. I have a spreadsheet that I call my checkbook. It's all the ins and outs so that I can always balance my disbursement. I also have a spreadsheet with different tabs for each taxing authority. And then on each tab, however many millages they collect, and the different, like the IFTs and the different things like that, I keep a column, and then I put each check in there for the row. And then at the end, I have a total of each, and then I can balance that to my self-report.
Randy, do you do anything different?
With the village, we don't disperse to anybody because all the money is kept locally, but I do disperse it out of the tax collection account once a month. I do have a DDA, so I have to give them their portion, but I usually wait until closer to after my tax season and it's balanced to give them one lump sum, and they are aware of that. So, and I keep a side Excel spreadsheet for my records as I disperse, like Brett does.
Paul?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. We keep one spreadsheet for our cash inflows and outflows. Do the same as Brett. We use that for balancing at month end and when we do distributions. And then also a separate spreadsheet for when we do distributions to each of our entities. The spreadsheet we have is all on one sheet as opposed to separate tabs, but it functions the same way.
Great. I as well have a spreadsheet, but it has probably 200 tabs on it. I'm just kidding. It doesn't have 200, but it has multiple tabs, and I start with my beginning roll in it. As I disperse out, it subtracts what was the beginning roll, so I know what to expect at settlement that should be remaining left to pay out to the county or out to the what would be left for the different taxing entities. So I like to keep track of even the check number that goes with the disbursement, just because quite often we'll get an audit request from the library system or through the transit system, and they'll want to know every single check that we've written, how much it was for, and so I keep all that in one spot so it's easy to refer back to. So, okay. Anyone else have anything that they would like to add?
Just a general comment on that. The spreadsheet for the disbursements. I know our county treasurer really appreciates that come settlement time, so we do share that with our county treasurer. She doesn't require it from the entities, but I know she does really appreciate it.
Yeah, same here as well. They Kent County always asks anyone that has anything that they can share just to kind of help break things down. If there's a difference, then they can see what we're doing compared to what they're doing. So,
hey, Lori.
Yes.
This is Brandy. Is that something that a couple of you want to share the format of your spreadsheets for others? I don't know if that was already talked about. We have a busy office today and we're small, so I keep getting interrupted, so I'm taking myself off camera. But
I've
already addressed that issue, but I thought that might be nice for those that are smaller entities to see how the larger municipalities do their spreadsheets.
I'd be happy to put something out there. Just to share, I can put a blank one out there so people can use it. Mine has lots of formulas in it, but you can always adjust it as well. So,
okay.
Lori, did you see we had a couple chat questions?
Yes. So one of the questions is regarding, there is a reference on here for the computerized tax roll. It's MCL 211.42A. And I'll kind of read off of some of these chat things, because if you're on your phone, you're not going to be able to see all these chat things, so I will kind of go back and forth. So once again, for the computerized tax roll, it's the MCL 211.42A. Thanks, Kim. So next from Barbie, our office is open by appointment only. Is it legal that we are not allowing appointments for tax payments and are requiring no contact payments? Does anyone have a lead on whether that could be legal or not? Brett, you might be the best person to answer this.
I don't know offhand if it's legal or not, but as long as they have the ability to pay, I would think that's okay. But if they are only able to pay by cash, that could be a problem.
Okay.
One of the things, just a comment on the cash payments, you know, we're not encouraging people to make cash payments in our outside Dropbox, but we do have people calling indicating that's their only capability and they do not want to enter our building, which right now we are open to the public but requiring masks. But for those people, we're just asking them that if that is the only way for you to pay, drop it in the Dropbox and let us know, you know, give us a call, let us know when you do that, and we will immediately go out there and retrieve it from the Dropbox.
One of the things that we're doing as well, and I kind of stole this from Anthony Mogiano, is that if someone needs to pay by cash and they don't want to enter our building, is they want to give me a call, myself or my staff will walk out to their car and get their payment for them, stamp their receipt, and then walk right back into our building and process it immediately. So we have a drive-up teller as well, but sometimes that's a little tricky for people as well. So. It's amazing how many people still want to come into the building, though, even though we've asked them not to. Okay. Lock boxes. So none of us on the panel necessarily have any expertise on lock boxes for tax and utility payments. And so I'm wondering if there's anybody that is on our Zoom that could talk to your experience with a lock box.
I could. I'm Terry from West Bloomfield. We do use a lock box as one of our options. So when we send our tax and water bills, we send an envelope that has a P.O. box that goes straight to Comerica Bank, and people can choose that as one option. Of course, they also can come in and pay, use our Dropbox, go online, pay EFT, pay credit card. We're open to the public, so they can come in person, too. But for some people, that's just easy to stick it in the envelope. They put they have to put the stub, because if not, it'll be an exception. And they put the check, and it gets processed. It's a 24/7 facility. I think they outsource it to like Click. But anyhow, it's a very modern facility. We don't have many that are rejected, and it's efficient, especially in the last days of tax collection. Because we're big. We have about 65,000 residents, about 26,000 parcels. So the last few days of tax collection is pretty busy here. So if some of the volume is going to lockbox, they can just process a lot faster than we can.
Is there an additional cost to your municipality or the taxpayer?
Yeah, you do get charged. It's like a very minimal, but it's a per item. But then we also have a discount and earnings credit. So, there's a cost, but it's a lot less expensive than having more staff, because we're not a big staff and we're a big community. So if we have a day that's hugely busy, we might even send some items ourselves to the lockbox, because we just don't have enough people to process it. We'd have to stay hours after, and just sometimes if you think the cost benefit, it's just a lot more money to have people here. But that's only a couple days a year.
Okay, great. So a couple of the comments on the chat is that they several municipalities are using Alliance, and it's worked very well. And then as well, some of the local banks accept tax payments. And that was a new thing. We talked about that last month, and I had never even heard of that. I think Ann Arbor does that. They work with the banks, and you can drop off tax payments there as well. Okay. The next question is about the SAFER grant for firefighters. Has anyone had any issues, or can you provide some insight if they have the SAFER grant and have been applying for reimbursement with FEMA or CARES? And so it looks like I have Brett, who has some expertise in this area.
Well, I wouldn't call it expertise. We've applied four times for a SAFER grant and haven't been successful yet. The latest application was for full-time firefighters, and it's still pending. So, no success yet. Do you want me to talk about the other stuff, or let somebody else talk about SAFER first?
Does anyone else have anything that they can add regarding the SAFER?
Brett, I just had a question on that SAFER grant. Is it strictly for full-time firefighters specifically? So we have a public safety department, which is both police and fire. So I didn't know if they would be eligible, or if our municipality would be eligible for that.
I think so. The first application we submitted was for part-time recruitment and retention, which was which we weren't successful. But then the subsequent three were all for the full-time. So we've done for both.
And it looks like Penny Ray has also mentioned that they've applied for all of them and still have not heard back as well. How about FEMA or CARES?
Yeah, we did apply for the public safety and public health payroll reimbursement, over $203,000. Still pending, and I know it's first come, first serve, and they're supposed to be distributed by September 18th, but we haven't heard whether we're approved or denied as of today. And we also applied for the first responder hazard pay premium for $32,000, and that's also pending, first come, first serve.
Go ahead, Terry.
I'm sorry.
You're fine. In West Bloomfield, we've applied for everything, and obviously you can't double dip, But we've applied with Oakland County, we've applied with CARES, we've applied with FEMA, and we kind of figured out which bucket seemed the most likely, and we think we're going to get $1.7 million back, which would be great. But who knows?
That's the problem. No one knows yet.
We have also Catherine, applied for everything that's eligible, but we have not heard back yet either. So,
interestingly, when I applied to FEMA, they actually called me and questioned every single expenditure I submitted, from wipes to signs to masks, everything, thermometers. And they said, okay, but I haven't heard anything, and that's been probably a month now. So we'll see.
In my experience, FEMA has always been the toughest one to deal with and the most picky on the information. So we've been focusing on right now both the first responder and the public safety, public health. I haven't heard back from them either, but also the coronavirus emergency supplemental funding that the state rolled out, I think specifically more geared toward law enforcement agencies, where they determined the max amount that you could get. With that program, ours was pretty minimal, but it was pretty vague and open as to the expenditures that are eligible. So we applied for that one as well. And so right now, you know, hopefully there'll be another round of the public safety, public health. So we're kind of waiting on that. For FEMA, we'll probably wait till the end and apply for that one, being that it's only 75% as opposed to 100% grant. And again, as I mentioned, they are the most picky and strict when it comes to documentation.
Catherine from the City of Wayne also stated that she applied for the fire department overtime costs with FEMA, and they were approved for those. Okay. All right, so everybody's in the holding pattern. Has anyone heard if there is any updates on the WorkShare program or the CARES Act application and deadlines for other reimbursement grants that are available?
This is Brett, sorry. I don't have anything on the WorkShare program, but I do know that the Public Safety and Public Health payroll reimbursement deadline passed. It was July 17th. But they may have a second round for June and July expenditures if they're still funding, because it's first come, first serve, and it's $200 million to spread around. And again, the payments by September 18th is when they're supposed to be made. So hopefully they use it all up, but hopefully not for others that didn't apply. The first responder hazard pay premium, the deadline for that September 30th, and that's up to $1,000 for eligible first responder. And you can either get direct payments for the hazard costs on that, or you can be reimbursed for payments you've already made for hazard pay. And then the only other one was the water utility assistance, but that's still being worked out. There's no details as of today when I checked.
With the public safety, public health, they did make some minor changes to that. On some municipalities' cases, some larger changes where they opened it up a little bit more. So they did extend the due date out to August 7th, which still has passed as of today. But they did open up to authorities where, if multiple jurisdictions have formed an authority for public safety or fire, that those authorities would now be eligible as well. So if there's any entities that have that type of relationship with an authority, those costs could be reimbursed as well.
Okay. So one question that also came up that none of our panelists have any expertise on, but is regarding hiring during this time. So if there's anyone that has they can share any information on some strategies they're using for hiring during this time.
I can speak on it a little bit, Lori. We have, of course, the need for public safety officers and police officers. So the interview was done via Zoom. And then, you know, of course, that's how they handled it. So it worked well. They're getting more comfortable with Zoom around here.
Good. Anyone else?
Maybe just to add, we don't currently have any open positions right now, but we're geared up for the Zoom to interview if we did come across a need for it. The tough part that we're dealing with is we really like that in person. meeting, especially if you're getting close to making that decision. So, you know, for that second interview or third interview, it's really, you know, it's really nice to get that face-to-face, to get that personality out of that person. So if we do get to that point, you know, I don't know if we would arrange for an in-person, you know, socially distanced, masked up interview or not. You know, our commission hasn't put a freeze on our hiring at this point, but it's just something we're talking through internally as to, you know, getting a good feel for a candidate.
All right, a couple of our comments on chat is that they've done in-person interviews. This is from Andrea. They limit the number of people in the room, mask, clean the area, leave time between to clean again, and they also do temp checks before people can enter the building. And then another comment was they started interviews with phone, and the last interviews were arranged socially distanced in-person interviews. So, good. All right, I'm going to jump over to a question that was added recently, and this is something I actually am very curious about too, but it's regarding the delinquent personal property collections. How is everyone handling that? Are you collecting? Are you giving more time? Are you heavily pursuing it? I can speak for myself that we are not heavily pursuing it right now, especially as our tax bills went out and so many came back from businesses that I know are open, but are still in business rather, but they're closed. And so I have a hard time going forward to collect last year's taxes when you're still not even open yet from the pandemic. So personally, we are not collecting right now. We've sent out notices, but we're not going after them. So I'd love to hear from anyone else how you're handling it.
This is Brett. We did the same thing. I sent my initial notice at the end of February and then a second notice in March. And then when everything shut down, I stopped. I didn't send any more notices. I didn't make any phone calls, visit anybody. I still got payments in, believe it or not, some big ones, but I haven't pursued any collections.
We're doing something similar where we're still sending out the notices, but not doing the other active things such as, you know, knocking on doors, things like that.
Here from Pittsfield Township, we're going to be sending out notices. And then I'm going to be doing personal phone calls. I'm going to start with the largest amounts and just let them know that we're willing to work with them in any capacity to set up payment plans, but we're not pursuing it hard.
How about, just kind of going in a different direction, but how about Jeopardies? Is very many people filing Jeopardies? I have a list of probably... I have four on my board right now that need to be sent out for Jeopardy, and I probably have the most I've ever had, but I still have been filing those type of claims. Anyone else? No? Okay. All right. One thing that we're experiencing here is that since our Register of Deeds is not open to the public, that everything has to be filed by mail, so it's definitely taking more time to get the Jeopardies. A couple comments regarding the delinquent collection is sending out notices always. Oakland County, so sometimes the county does collections. Sending out notices as usual, but not going too extreme for collections. In Muskegon Township, they're doing mailings, but have added the delinquent notice on the summer tax bill for the first time rather than going to the extreme. That's a really good idea. I didn't think about doing that. That is a really good idea. Maybe I'll try to keep that in the back of my head for winter time to add that information on the summer tax or on the winter tax bill that there is delinquent from prior year. So, okay. Randy, did you say you have a DDA or a brownfield?
I have a DDA, and we're working on a potential brownfield, so I may be asking many questions later, but
okay.
I do have a DDA.
Do you have to settle with the county, or because you're a village, you don't have to settle with the county?
No, I settle with the county. I'm one of the villages that we did the resolution, so now I settle when you do at the in March. So we do that resolution. You have to do the resolution before June 1st with your governing body saying you want to extend that. So any villages on here, we're doing that. This is our second year. It's working great. So I continue to collect, and then I settle with her. But I'm the one that's dispersed, so it's really just our records matching hers as far as my collection. And we use BSNA, so there's a small margin of error.
Okay. So when it comes to, so one of the questions was regarding DBAs and LDFAs when settling with the county. Is there anything specific you do to make sure that it all lines up together when settlement comes along?
No, as long as I've, you know, settled with the DDA and issued the amount that I've collected, they have no issue with it, so.
Okay. All right. So I'm not sure who asked that question, but Randy might be able to assist if you're looking for some more information on what to do with your DDA for settlement. So,
And if they have any questions on village tax collection, because it does run a little differently, and there's some options that you have, please give me a call. So,
okay, we'll jump another way and talk about safety and security of staff during this time. Can our panel maybe chat a little bit about how you're managing your safety and security of your staff?
So up in the city of Ironwood, we're probably doing what most are doing, but we have daily health screenings for our employees. It is a self-screening that we have. So employees are asked to complete a daily questionnaire and take their temperature. They can do it at home if they have a device. Otherwise, we do have a touchless device, a touchless scanning, forehead scanning device here that is available. Lots of sanitary wipes. We've put a lot more hand sanitizing stations throughout our municipal building and our other buildings. We do require face masks unless you're sitting at your own workstation, but anytime you get up to go somewhere that's used by other employees or the public, you have to wear your face mask. And the public coming in also has to wear face masks. If they don't have one, we do provide them with them. Of course, we have signage all over the place, at every entry door, and all of the floor markings for 6 feet social distancing, things like that, just to make it as clear as possible what we're trying to do. We actually did install some touchless faucets. That was kind of something that was on our radar anyway, but this was a good time to really push it through. So we did do that. And then all of our meetings, even our internal staff meetings that we have with people in the same building, they're all held via Zoom now. And it's working very well. One of the things, as you notice, I have a headset on. We've allowed our employees, if they want one, to get one. We get one for them. And it really helps with the clarity, I've noticed for others that have them, as well as reducing the background noise. So if I have something going on behind me or, you know, in the office next door, it really only picks up what I'm saying. So that was a big help for us. And then with our commission meetings as well for our commissioners and everybody else who's usually at their homes when we're doing our Zoom meetings and have, if they have children like I do, it really helps eliminate that background noise. So that's what we're doing here.
Sandy or Brett, do you have anything to add?
Go ahead, Brett, if you want.
I was just going to say we do pretty much all of that stuff. We also, I don't know if you mentioned this, but we have controlled access to the building. We have a little doorbell, and then we can allow people in that controls how many people are in the building. And then we try to handle it right at the door if they have to drop off a ballot or if they want to have a tax payment and they don't want to come in or they don't want to wear a mask. We take it up, receipt it for them, then bring it back. That controls how many customers enter a building. But for the employee stuff, it's pretty much the same as Paul.
Ours is the same, too. We're a smaller staff, so we do not wear our masks amongst each other. We all agree that wasn't something we felt we needed to do. We have some shields up at our desks and at the counter, but we are getting ready to relocate into a new building. So as that design phase is going on, COVID's been considered about how we're going to design it versus how we used to. And we're doing all our meetings on Zoom, so we're getting very comfortable. I like Paul's idea of the headphones because the biggest issue I have is our council meetings. Some have children, and I have to keep them all muted until they're ready to talk because there can be a lot of background noise on their meetings. So,
Does anyone have anything in place of how you will what you would do in the event that one of your employees gets COVID?
We do.
We are going to work from home again if that occurs, because we have I have two other staff that I work with in the village manager. So, you know, when we had, for instance, we had the election last Tuesday, we share a building with the township. The community hall's in the center of it. That's where she was holding the election. We all worked remotely that day, so we weren't exposed to the foot traffic for the election. And that's the kind of stuff that we're doing.
I was just going to say, Kalamazoo County adopted a COVID-19 preparedness plan, and we kind of cookbooked off that and made it our own. And we have what to do if an employee is suspected of having it and if there's a confirmed case. Basically, it's the same thing. They have to self-quarantine for 14 days either way, and if it's confirmed, then we're going to shut the office down for 14 days. That's the short.
Wow. Okay.
We're similar to Brett because we're all here. You know, there is plexiglass between us and the public. And even though we all have masks when we're moving around, like most of you guys are saying you do too, you know, just sitting in our little pods, we're not in masks. If I come out from my office, I put it on. But it, like, basically we had a scare in the office and we were all going to leave. They were going to we've had our office deep clean like 4 times already after the election. Anytime we think somebody to be in contact with somebody, we bring in people and they professionally clean the office. But we had somebody we thought might have been in contact with someone who had it, so we all went home in my department, and the next morning at 9 a.m. we were all going to get tested, but thankfully we heard back that the person was negative, so we didn't have to do that. But we were all going to work remotely in my pod because we're pretty much separate from the other pods, but I guess if it spread, we have a preparedness, however you say that word, plan two, and eventually we would just go back to all working remotely. But we've been all here since, yeah, I was here the whole time, but we've been all here since June 10th and open to the public.
We have the same, go ahead, Laura.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so we have the same preparedness plan, which really lays out what we are to do in the case of either a positive case, suspected case, things like that. But we've unfortunately have had positive cases in our, unfortunately not here in our municipal building, but in other departments. And so people have self-quarantined, they've gotten the tests, stayed home for the required days. You know, our local health department is very hands-on with the contract tracing. And the thing that's worked for us, if there's any positive out of this, is really the masks and the social distancing, staying 6 feet apart, has been a big factor in others being able to still continue to work and not having to be required to go get testing. They've been considered low-risk cases. And we've had some of our employees that were low-risk that they did go get tested just to make sure, and they came back negative. But that is it's been a big thing for us, and our health department has really stressed that, you know, if you're wearing your masks and you're staying 6 feet apart, that, you know, even if you do get some positive cases, they're considered, you know, you're considered to be a low risk person because of that.
Okay. Tina Glenn mentioned that if a COVID case occurs in their department, the department is sent home and the department is cleaned. A lot of cleaning. Tyrone Township does every week cleans, and they're open 4 days a week. There is some questions about who does the cleaning for different for the municipalities. If anybody has any suggestions to throw it in the chat, that would be great.
We have a contract contractor that actually does our cleaning, and so we've definitely have adjusted that contract to allow for additional hours for more of the deep cleaning in our buildings.
We've done the same thing as far as the contractor, because we are in our summer season with the tourists. We have multiple public bathrooms, so they're coming in and cleaning them more often, and the style of cleaning they're doing is different now. So, and our police department has no positive COVID tests, but they have relatives that have been positive, so they've had to self-quarantine and deal with more over there. So our chief and any police staff that come in to do any work with us directly all mask up to come in here. So So be considerate of our staff.
There is a comment that Reliable Management Systems is a FEMA certified company, and they fog every week for, I can't see which municipality that is, plus the regular office cleaning. Okay, so we're going to move on. This is not something that our panel has any, I think we're all back in the office majority, so if there's someone that's on that can attest to this, but the townships or cities that are working from home, how are you taking care of your residents' needs? So that one's, I mean, we kind of all had that a little bit when before we all went back to the office, but currently during tax collection, that can be a little bit tricky. I do see Janine said, working remotely is difficult with check payments still coming in. At the beginning of all this, she would go in and process payments for several weeks. Then she brought the front desk up in to help when needed to get the tax roll together. Currently, about half the staff come in each day. Others are still working from home.
Hey, Laurie, maybe just a comment, you know, like you had indicated, we're not there yet and we're not going through this, but if we were, you know, if we had a major setback and everybody got, you know, everybody was sent back home, I think what we would do is kind of go back to where we were in March, is our essential front desk employees would still come to work. The municipal building would be totally shut down, so no public access, but those essential employees, they would still come in, be answering the phone for, you know, for public, to either water, you know, water issues or other issues. And then, you know, would be strictly a drop box, for any type of payments that people didn't mail in or use a credit card for. So I think we would still staff our main, you know, essential finance office employees so we could at least keep business going as usual. But obviously work from home would be, we're all set up to do that, so we would do that to the extent that we could.
We still have some of our staff that can work from home is still working from home. So, for example, our entire assessing department, they have one person here per day, or one person every day is here in the office, but the rest of them are still working remotely from home. Same with our HR department. They usually have someone here a few hours a day, but the rest of them are still working from home. And I'm sure there's other departments as well, but those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head. So. All right. Let's jump over to the state budget. Some exciting conversation. Brett, I'm going to let you jump in wherever you want to talk about legislative issues, the state budget. It's just the floor is yours. This is your area of expertise, and I'm sure everybody is anxious to hear about what's going on.
Right. So the question is for the 2021 budget, and that's not really been worked on yet. That's supposed to be – that will happen after the third revenue estimating conference on August 24th. They'll start working on next year's budget, and they hope to have it done sometime in September. But concerning this year's budget – the last update I saw was there was a $3.2 billion budget shortfall. The governor and legislature came to an agreement in July to do several things. One was to cut all August statutory revenue sharing payments. That was a total of $43.5 million, so we won't be getting the statutory for August. A couple of appropriations bills, an executive order eliminating some work projects, $350 million. Transferred from the budget stabilization fund, and then an injection of federal CARES Act dollars to get that balanced. That's a lot of stuff. But we know that constitutional revenue sharing will be down just because that's based on sales tax and not as many purchases are being made around the state. I know that Act 51 money will be down just because the total revenue is down, so we won't be getting as much road funds. Beyond the August payment, we still could have more statutory payments cut. They can't touch the constitutional as of right now. Let's hope that stays the same. But really, it all depends on that August 24th revenue estimating conference to see where we're going to end up at the end of this year going into next year.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yes.
Was that, I guess I must have missed that the August payment for the statutory payment, the revenue sharing would be cut. Was that recently put out there?
It was sometime in July during the whole agreement that they made that they would cut the, I call it CBTRS, but I know there's other statutory payments that go along with that.
Okay. And I might have read it and it just didn't click.
Yeah, as of right now, it's just the payment received in August, but to be more to come, I guess.
Hey, Brett, I guess correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'd heard, or I think I read, and they touched on this a little bit. I attended the MML Monday Morning Live this past Monday, and they'd indicated that August statutory revenue sharing that's going to be cut, that it will be backfilled with CARES Act funding to the tune of 150%. Now, I know, obviously, with the statutory revenue sharing, the government has some capabilities to obviously eliminate that, and even if they choose to backfill it, again, they could change their mind on that. So I don't know how much we want to heavily rely on that. But is that true? Did I hear that correctly, that the intent is to backfill it to the tune of 150%?
Correct. So whatever your statutory payment would have been, you can use that in up to 150% in CARES Act dollars. But the same rules apply. It can only be spent on items that were affected by COVID, which, you know, essential services, that sort of thing. You can't just have the money, unfortunately.
Yeah, the U.S. Treasury has been saying the same thing. They're like, that's going to disappear, but the CARES Act is meant to be a replacement for that. Mm-hmm. But then we all wondered, are we really going to get our full CARES Act money? How's that going to work? Will it replace it? We just don't know.
Well, and with the CARES Act money, there's quite a few hoops that you have to jump through and process in order to even qualify.
Right. So if you spent the money that's eligible for reimbursement, you'll certainly get your money back plus an extra 50%. But if you're not, then you're probably just out the revenue sharing.
I know the MML is holding a webinar later today, actually, and I believe they're going to touch on that in some more detail. So for any MML members, I think that link is available on their website.
Yep, it looks like in the chat it says this afternoon at 2:00 MML regarding the revenue share issue and CARES money. All right. How about an update on the Senate Bill 943?
All right, so I'm reading from something that Judy Allen from MTA sent me, so bear with me. She said they had a work group, and it was shared that Senator McGregor intends to move something in September to provide assistance to those who are not able to pay summer taxes by the due date. However, they determined that any proposal would have to exclude repeat offenders, and there would be need to some sort of criteria. And then for businesses, that may be that they remain closed to the executive order for them to qualify. That was the first part. Then it also said that a county treasurer shared that they're not seeing any change in property tax payments. And the only those that haven't paid so far are just the so-called repeat offenders. And then MML was going to check with their members who have by 31st deadlines to see what level of property tax payments had been received to see if it was even an issue, end quotes. They also discussed having the state provide a credit, business or individual, to those that might be eligible to cover interest and penalties for the period. But all of this is still conjecture. They're going to regroup in a week or two, she said, and that was last week, so this week or next week. She said most likely there will be something in September, but no one knows what that's going to look like as of right now.
Is there anybody that we can express our concerns to? Are you taking that information to MML? Obviously, I think some of the big concerns is that the fact that the majority of us will have already collected our tax payments, and then as well as that collected them and then dispersed them. So we don't want to be refunding anybody. So we want to make sure that's not part of this going forward.
Right. So far that wasn't discussed. It was only that those who weren't able to pay would be the ones that would get some sort of deferral or credit or something. But I think the best person to talk to would be your legislator, because I think it means more to them when they hear it from their constituents directly rather than from MTA or MML.
Does anyone else have any specific concerns? I think it would be great if we could all just kind of brainstorm like how this could, you know, compile itself into issues, because I feel like the more we can think through things and think about what the ramifications are, the easier it is to present that picture to our legislators, like Brett had mentioned.
Well, I think some of the concerns that some of the cities have is that we have different due dates. Like, I work for the city of Plainwell in Allegan County. Our due date is Monday. I think John from City of Grand Rapids said their due date was July 31st. If I remember right, I think the city of Kalamazoo is also due July 31st. So the cities have concerns and questions about what happens if they do this action in September. What about the late fees that we're going to be charging on Tuesday next week for us?
Right.
So yeah. I think that's part of some of the city's concerns in this.
I know John Globinski from Grand Rapids also mentioned that, you know, there are going to be people who have paid their tax bills and, you know, are suffering from a hardship themselves, and yet they paid their tax bill and they will not be able to take advantage of such a, you know, an advantage if they put something into place. So it's not a fair and equal type legislative action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our tax due date is August 20th. So like you said, it's all over the place for cities, and then the townships are all uniform.
I'll add one problem that may occur, I don't know, is that people who did pay their taxes on time but who are also struggling, what happens when this comes out for the people who didn't pay? You know, why wasn't this offered to me, you know, at that time? I don't know what the answer would be, but I can see that happening.
Yes. Yeah, legally, I wonder, you know, if there's any ramifications as far as, you know, I don't know. That just makes me nervous to not be able to offer something to all the people fairly. So we should not expect to hear anything on this until September, is what you are anticipating, correct?
Correct. That was the latest update. They're supposed to be having a work group soon to work it out.
Okay.
One thing I'll add, that Judy requested that anybody who can provide to her or Chris Hackbarth what your tax payment levels thus far have been. Have they been more or less than last year? Is it just the same people who aren't paying? They want to gather that information for their work group. So anybody can send those directly to whoever, your city or village, obviously Chris, or township, to Judy, so they can have that ammunition when they go into the work group. That was requested.
Okay. That's great. So we'll put that, maybe we can put that on the listserv as well, or maybe on our Facebook page, to contact Judy or Chris with your information on your tax collection.
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Couple of the little chats that's happening as regarding our future treasure meeting. I don't recall if we have one set for September or not, but I'll make sure that we let Dovetail Solutions get that information out. Our plan is to continue to do this each month, so I hope that you are gaining some information out of this that is helpful to you. We always are looking for panelists, if you're if you would like to be on the panel and help answer some of these questions. If you have questions, don't be afraid to send them in whenever you'd like, and we'll put them on the agenda. We can try to have an agenda ahead of time next time. I'll talk with Janelle and Shelley and see if we can get something like that together, and see if we can put together some kind of notes as well. If there is anyone that has any additional questions, Paul, Brett, Randy, do you have anything you'd like to close with?
I was going to say to just expand on the educational issues with the Treasurers to Treasurers webinar, but we're going to be having a board meeting in 2 weeks, and the board will be discussing some future education opportunities that will be rolling out to the membership. So look forward to that. We're trying to adapt to these changing times and still give everybody the opportunity to, you know, as part of our association loves is the connection that we have between the peers, as well as still being able to keep abreast of all of our needs education-wise. So we're going to be looking at that. Okay.
If I could add one thing, Randy, we do have another treasurer to treasurer scheduled, and that is going to be September 9th at 10:30 in the morning.
Okay.
So Wednesday, September 9th.
Thanks, Janelle. I couldn't recall.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
I'm wondering how people are addressing their residents that are asking, you know, who do I contact with my concerns about paying my tax bills? Has anyone been dealing with that? We've been getting that quite a bit.
I can say from my particular situation is I have had people express that, and I've told them about the legislation that has been in progress, and I have referred them on to the legislators to chat with them regarding it.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what we've been doing, but I just wondered if there was anything else.
We've been doing the same. I've received a few phone calls regarding delaying payments and things like that. Same thing, you know, we're kind of set in stone on how we apply our penalties and when. So unless the state comes in and changes that, we're continuing as usual. The one thing that I was encouraging, you know, our due date was August 10th, so it's here and gone. But the one thing I was encouraging taxpayers to do was at least if they could make a partial payment to reduce that penalty, since it's only on the outstanding balance at the time of the due date.
The other thing that I've noticed in my little city is my tax collections, number one, are not down. They're basically the same as they have been, but I have been getting more summer tax deferments for some seniors that may qualify. So we're trying that as an option for some folks who may be struggling a little bit to pay their bills. We do have a little bit of an older population in my little burg here, so that's helping too a little bit.
Yes, that one tool we can provide.
Right.
The one tool in our toolbox.
Exactly.
All right. Well, it is 11:30, and I do want to respect everybody's time. So thank you so much on behalf of MMTA. Thank you to our panelists and everybody who has attended. If you were on the phone in the beginning and didn't get a chance to let Janelle or Shelley know that you attended, please email them so that we do have your information to keep track for education points. And then if Randy and Paul and Brett, if you wouldn't mind staying. Everybody else, have a wonderful day. Thank you very much.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.